In professional sports, a franchise player is an athlete who is not simply the best player on their team, but one that the team can build their franchise around for the foreseeable future.
Welcome into a brand new edition of Franchise Players here on WWBG 1470 AM and WTOB 980 AM 96.7 FM. Here with you every Friday afternoon in the Triad. I'm your host, Desmond Johnson. You can catch the video version of this on the Tobacco Road Sports Radio YouTube channel. Shout out to everybody that subscribed over the past couple of months. Visit us there at youtube.com/@Tobacco Road Sports Radio. They got bumped last week. The host from the Cat Cave Carolina Panthers podcast, they'll be in the house to talk a little Carolina Panthers and a little WWE as well. And we've got Joe DeLeon from the Believe Podcast Network from the Charity Stripe. He's going to talk to us about this craziness of the college football playoff. Was Florida State hosed or was they not? So we'll get into that too. But before we do anything else, I had to bring on my man Joe Person from The Athletic. Joe, you and Diana Rossini dropped a little nugget about midway through this week on the Carolina Panthers. You can everyone can go check it out at theathletic.com. Kind of, if you're a Carolina Panther fan and you read through this, it almost felt like we kind of confirmed our suspicions for what was going on over the course of the season. Now, in this article, Joe, you guys kind of detail a coaching staff that just never seemed to be on the same page going all the way back to really preseason, now that I think about it. Were you and other media reporters feeling that tension among the coaching staff like throughout the year, or was it something you kind of noticed as the end was getting closer?
Well, the most obvious example was one that all of us saw was when Frank Reich gives Thomas Brown play calling duties, lets him do it for three games, and then takes it back. And you're just like, that's not really cool. Yeah, and that's not something you see a lot of. And so that was sort of the first tip that there was probably more going on. And I should point out too, Desmond, that the defensive staff, I've got no real sniff or indication that they have had these kind of dysfunctionality issues that Ajero Averro and his guys have really worked well together. And I think it's worth pointing out that these were guys that Ajero knew, that he's right. Worked with all of them, I believe, except one guy on that whole defensive staff. He worked with, well, if you remember, and back in February, I found an article last night that I did in February, and it was very much praising that the idea that, Frank Reich was saying, Dave Tepper really, opened up his wallet so I could go get this staff. But there was a nugget in there, and it wasn't like I reported. These guys said it. But they wanted to go out, and they wanted Frank Reich to get out of his comfort zone and hire guys outside of his circle. And so I think what you had happen then, Desmond, is when things started going bad. Now, he had a couple guys like who you would consider like Frank guys, like Deuce Staley, he had been with in Philadelphia, Josh McCown, and Deuce had a history in Philadelphia. And then the other guys in the building, not so much. And I just think what we saw was I don't know that it's unusual. Any team that goes 1-10, 1-11 to start the year, you're going to start seeing some of that those clashes. But it really did play out in real time in Charlotte.
Follow him on Twitter/X, whatever the kids are calling it these days, at Joseph Person. Joseph Person from The Athletic joining us here on Franchise Players to kick off this sports-filled weekend. Talking Carolina Panthers, if you haven't read this article by him and Diana Rossini on The Athletic and you're a Carolina Panther fan and you've gone through the torture of this season, go check it out. It'll probably answer a lot of questions that you might have had about what was going on. I'm glad you touched on the fact that it feels like there was two different camps going on in the building, almost like old school NWO Hollywood versus NWO Wolfpack, where it's like two different factions, but you're under the same banner kind of. It did feel like offense, defense, But then it also felt like there was division just on the offensive side, like you said, where it never made sense to me, Joe, that they would say one thing and then do another. Like the offensive line, for example. Like Frank Wright clearly knows the strength of the offensive line was downhill running. What they did the last half of last year, it's pretty much why they kept them and kept Campion on as well. But then you turn around and you don't do that. Like you intentionally not do that and do something else. And even when you're asked about it later on in the year, I know you and Vashti Hurt and a couple others that were in there were constantly asking, you know, about this. And Frank was just clearly like, we're not a smash mouth football team, which right. I thought was really weird to say out loud as a football coach that we're not this, we're trying to be something else. But he never really clearly explained what that was in terms of the identity he was trying to create. I guess I'm trying to figure out what the identity was going to be if this is continued on. Do you think there's a chance that any of these coaches on the staff remain next year? Because, you know, they did keep Campion and Tabor from the previous
year. I know. And now Tabor's the interim coach. So I'm not ruling it out. I mean, I think those guys who have good – it should be said, these guys have good coaching resumes and backgrounds. And clearly they have, over the last couple of years, earned the trust of David Tepper. And so, it depends who the head coach will be. But to your point, Desmond, about this identity, it's layered and nuanced, and it's tough to get your hands around, just as you said, for fans and for media. I think it's tough for the offensive staff to get their hands around. And here a couple reasons why. You had Thomas Brown bringing the Rams concept of wide zone and mid zone runs, which were, as you said, very different than what the Panthers hung their hats on at the end of last season under Wills.
Yeah, we don't do that.
but here's the thing, that the offensive line that they have here, that's their strength. But what did they do in free agency? They went out and got Miles Sanders, who's really more of a fit for that wide zone, more so than Deontay Freeman, who they could have brought back.
Which kind of explains why he left, because if I'm not mistaken in the timeline, he left before they signed Miles Sanders. So I assume that he was told what they were going to run, and he chose to take less money to go to Chicago.
Yeah. And then here's the other thing. I think that Frank Reich, first of all, his background was more kind of, I mean, not kind of, a lot of shotgun, a lot of horizontal stretch in the pass game rather than deep shots. And they drafted a quarterback, Desmond, who'd not been under center at Alabama at all, pretty much, and wasn't comfortable under center. We reported in our story that Bryce Young, you know, made it clear that he wasn't comfortable under center. So, so you had Frank and Bryce wanting to do the shotgun thing, you know, Thomas Brown wanting to do the wide zone ran. Never identity.
I'm just trying to figure out what to do with it, because it's like they're fighting each other. Like, and this happened from the very beginning, like in preseason, where people were questioning the offense, and Frank's like, you know, slow down. We're very vanilla right now. We're not really showing what we're going to do. They literally are doing the same thing that they were doing in preseason. So it's just kind of weird. It felt like it was Frank's offense, and people were trying to push him to do other things, and he didn't want to do it. One of the things I thought that was really noticeable in this article that you guys wrote was the fact that it felt like the assistant coaches kind of figured out the hierarchy like very quickly and decided that, you know, when things weren't going the way they wanted to, they didn't go to Frank. It almost feels like they went around Frank and got messages to the owner and Scott Fitter. And then the owner would come down and be like, hey, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? I've been attacked on Twitter for the past 3 weeks because I put a tweet out one Sunday during a Panthers game where I was like, Bryce doesn't really step back in the pocket. Like he gets the snap and he kind of does this little 1-2 hop type thing, but he never really drops back and he never really climbs the ladder either, like into the pocket. Like, now granted, there's usually three dudes in his face and he can't climb the pocket, but I'm not talking about those plays. I mean, the ones when he actually has a pocket and he could go up in it, he kind of, and I went back and watched a film in Alabama. He was doing this there too. He was just more confident in it, where he would get it, take about a step or two back, and then he would just throw it from right there. And people were coming at me like, you know, well, he doesn't have protection. How's he supposed to climb the pocket? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, if he doesn't have protection to climb the pocket up, why is he not taking a few steps back as soon as he gets it to give himself more room? He's not even doing that. Like, no one's even teaching him to do this. And you guys kind of pointed out in that article that there was staff members that seen this and had decided to go around Frank and tell, I guess, Fitter and Tepper. Tepper is the one that tells Frank, hey, work on his footwork or whatever. And this is right around the end, like, I guess around Thanksgiving weekend. Right.
Yeah, before. It was. And good on you for picking up on that and going back and looking at the Alabama tape. Yeah, I mean, I'm told it's pretty obvious to see it on film that he wasn't getting deep enough. And, you know, was that an issue with the pass that besides all the issues throwing the ball? I think some in the building thought that was causing the issues in pass protection. Like, they didn't really know where he was going to be in his drops. And there were a lot of times it just felt like the pocket would kind of engulf Bryce.
Yeah.
And I think to your point, had he been, you know, a little deeper in the pocket, then maybe he avoids some of that. And again, I'm not excusing the offensive line play. It's been really bad. Separation from the wide receiver separation's been bad, but it all worked in lockstep. And somebody noticed this. They had said they were not going to mess with Bryce's foot. We made this point in the article too. They were not, as a staff, the offensive staff, they collectively agreed they weren't going to, you know, it was a lot to kind of take on, and he was going to be learning new offense. Let's not mess with his mechanics in year one. Not that pass sets are exactly, dropbacks are exactly mechanics, but you know what I'm getting at. And then in week 13, they're you know, trying to drill this into him. So that to me was one of the most interesting things in, you know, in our report.
And we didn't really see a difference, to be honest. Like, in that stretch, I didn't really notice anything different about his dropbacks or climbing or anything like that. Now, when he climbs, usually he's being chased. Like, he's getting chased out of the pocket, which is not what I'm talking about.
So that's a completely different thing.
So let's just stay on Bryce for a second. How much has this season, do you think, in your opinion, set Bryce Young back? Do you feel he's progressed in any areas since week one?
Hard to point to any one thing. You know, there was that stretch, the Miami game, the Houston game, not really the Colts game, but maybe even Detroit. There was a third one.
Yeah.
And you're starting to think, you know, he wasn't putting up CJ Stroud numbers, but he was throwing for like 238, 240, and he just looked pretty comfortable. And you're like, okay, they might be onto something here. And we might see him by late November, December, start hitting that 300 burger. But obviously it has gone the other direction. And it just wasn't a good offense. I mean, they looked at tape from Alabama, and you know, he had a lot of success in RPO game there. So they kind of dabbled in that, but really never committed to that. At one point when Reich took the offense back over, he wanted to do more no huddle, kind of hurry up, because they had seen early in the year in some of those blowout losses, Bryce kind of got into a rhythm, you know, when it helped that the other team was in prevent. But so they tried. They've tried everything. I don't know that they've ever really hit on anything that's been super successful. Now teams are sort of starting to make an emphasis of taking Adam Thielen away. And it's crazy that a 33-year-old wideout would be the focus of their defensive game plan.
Yeah.
But we've seen Thielen kind of disappear the last 2 weeks. And, you know, Mingo did some nice things, but nothing that made you just say, whoa, this is what we're waiting for.
I'm so glad you landed there, because that's why I'm in trouble on Twitter this week. Because I've been telling folks, I'm like, you know, Bryce really, he hasn't had a moment to me this year, like a throw or a play or something, where when it was done, I stood up and I was like, that's why we traded up 8 spots to go to number 1 to get him, because he's a unicorn. He's different. There's something about him. he's playing okay, but I mean, he was the number one overall pick. We gave up the farm for him. So I don't feel like it's wrong for me to be like, at this point, especially after firing Frank Wright after 11 games or 12 games, I don't think it's wrong for me to, someone who has to, just like you, has to watch these games every week and then talk about them all week long. I don't think it's wrong to sit there and go, our expectations for Bryce should be higher. We shouldn't throw excuse after excuse after it, because that's not going to help him. You know, keep saying the offensive line's bad, didn't have wide receivers, blah, blah, blah. He has to have a game where he elevates the offense to some extent, because he's the number one overall pick. That's what you kind of expect from a number one overall pick, to elevate the ones around you. And honestly, I don't know if he can. And that's kind of where I'm at. I'm not throwing him out. I'm not saying he's a bust or anything by any means, because we still can't really – Dan Orlovsky said it best a couple weeks ago. We really won't know about him until like 2025. Like, we really won't, because he's going to learn a whole new offense here in like 4 months probably, and he's going to have to do this all over again. So we'll kind of see there. But quick hits before I get you out of here. Your article made me kind of feel like Scott Fitterer may not be on the hot seat that many people feel he is, because it kind of feels like all he's doing is whatever Tepper asked him to do. How can Tepper ask him to fire him or fire him when he's only doing what Tepper's asked him to do for the most part, it feels like. Do you feel like Tepper, do you feel like Fitterer's on a hot seat, or do you feel like he's kind of excluded from all this?
I do think his seat's very hot. But you're right. You know, occasionally I'll get the sense that Tepper's, you know, Scott is a company guy. Like he, and I think sometimes it would behoove him and others to tell Tepper no. And, but nobody's really done that much the last couple of years. I think Ron's staff, going back to Rivera, think they were more inclined to kind of hold their ground, but
you see what happened then.
So I don't know. If you're asking me today, my guess would be Fitterer would not be around, but I, you know, he's got no assurances one way or another. That was our reporting. Others have reported that. But what I would say is, I mean, I think he's going to be around to the end of the season. There's no real benefit to get rid of him now. But it's going to be fascinating. I mean, and we hadn't really gotten into this, but in terms of who they bring in as head coach, you know, Bill Belichick, Jim Harbaugh, they're going to want to do their own thing, probably. Certainly Bill will for personnel. So that would end Scott Fitterer's tenure here for sure.
I want Jim Harbaugh. I'm on record as wanting him last year. We were doing Believe in Panther podcast last year before when Wilkes was the interim, when I was like, go get Harbaugh, like go get. And then he called in and I was like, this is actually happening. It's going down. And then it just kind of fizzled out. I think the situation's even better for him to come in now, because now he knows he has a quarterback. Now he knows he's going to come in with a defense. I will say this for Scott Fitterer, as much as we come down on him on some of the misses in the draft and things of that sort, there's another side to this. The defense is ranked like seventh overall in yards allowed, and a lot of it was like journeymen and people he had to pick up almost off the street because of so many injuries. For the defensive staff to be able to have done what they've done, and for Fitterer to have found those players, you got to give him credit for that. So there's two sides here. So I can see why he's still here. The season's still going on. He's still having to make transactions. So I can see that, but I also can see on Black Monday, taking a box out to the car. So we'll see what happens with that. Real quick, in your mind, Joe, how attractive is this head coaching job in your opinion? And is this the worst Panther season in history? Because you've been covering this team for a long time and you've seen some pretty ugly seasons here in Charlotte. This is approaching 2001, 2010 territory. What say you? How attractive is this job? And is this the worst season in Panthers history?
Well, I think so. Let's say they end up going with a young offensive coordinator. Basically, Frank Reich was the first offensive coach, offensive background, I'm sorry, in franchise history. But let's say they go that route, but with a young guy: Bobby Slowick, Ben Johnson, Brian Johnson, Frank Smith, somebody like that. But first of all, Ben Johnson's going to, I think, have better offers. And by better, I mean the Chargers that with Justin Herbert. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the sleeping giant, like, to me. If you're an offensive guy, you want to go to L.A. and coach Justin Herbert.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And, you know, could you make, you know, would one of these guys look at Bryce and say, I can make something? Of course they're going to say that. And you know, for Panther fans, hopefully that happens. But is it, you know, Tepper, like, let me just say this. The idea, like, his history, his resume, his track record, has some people in the coaching community, agents and possible candidates, they're asking questions about Tepper. Like, is this real? Do I really want to work with him? So, you know, but it is one of 32. So, but there are more attractive jobs. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
Is this the worst team I've ever covered? I mean, it's either that or 2010. 2010, Desmond, was the misfortune of my first season on. And it was like, oh, my God, is it always going to be like this?
Baptism by fire. Yeah, that was a rough.
John Fox was like, you know, somebody asked him about why he played Tony Pike like in week 7. And he was like, you're going to have to ask the personnel department. Like, totally threw the front office under the bus. That was a bad year. This has not been fun.
No, no.
I remember week 1 in Atlanta, and this isn't to take any shots, but this is a true story. We're in the Mercedes-Benz Dome. And I'm watching this offense, and I just said to whoever was sitting next to me in the press box, I said, this isn't even really fun to watch. Like, this is not a captivating, dynamic offense.
Yes.
And really, even their one win against Houston, that wasn't good offense.
That was the defense.
That was a rock fight.
Sure.
So I don't know. It's been disappointing. You know, you feel for Panther fans who've had to go through this now. 6 years. You know, 6 years with Tepper and not a single playoff berth. Looked like that very first year of 2018. You remember, like, they go to Pittsburgh on a Thursday night. And
yeah.
Cam gets drilled by TJ Watt, and it's been pretty much horse crap since.
That literally was the start of the downfall, really, because I think they lost out the rest of that season, if I'm not mistaken.
Maybe won one more.
Cam was out, and then from there.
No, I think you're right. They lost their last 8, went 6-10.
And we just haven't sniffed a winning season since. And really, that was the exodus of the 2015 Panthers. At that point, Cam gets cut. They pretty much let everybody go, or they retired, except for Christian McCaffrey, who they actually gave money to, and then trade him off 2 years later or whatnot. And I was saying that the other day to somebody else too, and I got to get you out of here. David Tepper hasn't really paid anybody since he's been here in 6 years. And I hadn't really thought about it, except for Christian McCaffrey. And then they traded him off in a panic week after they fired Matt Rhule. And looking back on it, it's like, why did you trade him again? I'm trying to figure out why you traded this dude for no reason, really. Like, they just kind of traded him out of here. So,
and then they held on to Brian Burns when he could have brought even more assets than McCaffrey.
The Rams have been sniffing around twice for this dude, and each time they're like, no, he's like, we're going to get him. We got him. But at this point, if you're Brian Burns, what's going to make you resign here? Like, you're going to be on your sixth head coach, like, in 6 years or whatever. Right. So it's just a mess. Joe Person, follow him on Twitter at Joe Person. Go check out that article at theathletic.com. It's him and Diana Russini. Excellent work. Just kind of peeling back the onion on the Carolina Panthers and the behind the scenes. Got to get him out of here. Joe, thanks for stopping by, man.
Desmond, have a great week, buddy.
Coming up, we'll have even more here. Panther talk, college football playoffs, even a little WWE. Franchise prayers here on WTOB 980 AM and WWBG 1470 AM.
In professional sports, a franchise player is an athlete who is not simply the best player on their team, but one that the team can build their franchise around for the foreseeable future.
Welcome into segment 2 of Franchise Players. Shout out to Joe Person from The Athletic for stopping by with us to talk about the bombshell article him and Diana Russini just dropped about all the backstage stuff going on with the Carolina Panthers and the coaching staff in the front office. If you missed that, you can definitely check that out. It's sitting in the Franchise Players Best Segment section of our YouTube channel, youtube.com/@TobaccoRoadSportsRadio. Joining me right now to talk a little college football playoffs, he is from the Believe Podcast Network, Rufino and Joe Show, that you can catch throughout the week over on Believe Podcast Network, Mr. Joe DeLeon. What's up, man?
Not much. It feels like the craziness of the playoff passed us by, but right now we're in this really, really weird phase. All the transfer portal madness. The month of December has never been crazier in the college football calendar, but I'm excited. There's just so much to talk about.
I haven't checked. I think the last time I looked at it was a day or two ago, but even when I looked then, there was like 1,150 kids in the transfer portal or something nuts. Like it was 400
I stopped counting.
Plus more. Yeah.
It's crazy. If you try to count, you're going to make yourself nuts by just like looking at the sheer number of it. But I mean, and the other thing too, is we get a lot of kids who hop in and then they change their mind and they come back. But yeah, it's the volume of it. It's nuts.
So we got a little bit to discuss here. And I know you're one of the guys that I lean on when it comes to college football and your expertise. You're there from like, you know, preseason onward into the combine and everything else. So you have a pretty good grasp of these teams and how good or bad they are. Before we get to the final four, the ones that are left, I want to talk about Florida State because me being an ACC country, I don't really have a dog in the fight here with any of this. And I had told folks that I do feel like Florida State got screwed over. They should have got put into the playoff. They're the only Power Five undefeated conference champ to ever be left out of it. But I understand what the committee was doing. My issue is not so much that Florida State got left out in favor of Alabama or Texas. It was more that the committee, it feels like they're kind of hiding behind Jordan Travis's injury to get the two best matchups. And that's really what they wanted all along, was the two best matchups. Give me your thoughts on this. Do you feel like Florida State would have belonged even without Jordan Travis? Do you feel like they should have had the opportunity to get their butt whooped in the Final Four like TCU did last year? Or do you feel like the committee got it right?
First of all, obviously, I really do share that sentiment that I do think that Florida State got screwed. But what is fair is not necessarily the right decision here on the committee's part. We do have to remember that this is an invitational. This is, a playoff where they make the decision on who goes. There is not a set locked criteria that teams, if they hit it, they're automatically guaranteed a spot. This isn't March Madness where you win your conference, you get a bid. So with that in mind, I don't think that the committee, there was a wrong decision to make. I don't think that they had a right or wrong decision because let's be honest here, if Alabama got pushed out of this or Texas got pushed out of this, the fans of those teams would be equally as upset, if not more upset, than the Florida State fan base right now. But I do, again, I agree.
Yeah. The whole conference.
Right. Right. But I do agree with the sentiment, though, that yes, they were screwed, because to go undefeated, to win your conference, to be deep enough and talented enough to have to play your third string quarterback who seemingly had no anticipation of ever touching the field this year, to throw him in there last minute, lack of preparation, to run the offense that you did, to still beat the second best team in your conference. It was still a good football team this year. Louisville was still a good team despite them playing bad in the ACC championship game. That's an accomplishment, and that is proof to me that that roster was good enough to at least show up and compete had they ended up playing anyone. So if they theoretically got this matchup with Michigan, I keep hearing a lot of people, my co-host Blake Ruffino says the same thing, that he thinks that Florida State would have gotten completely smoked if they played Michigan. And I disagree with that notion, especially seeing how effectively Michigan wins by just running the ball and playing defense. Their quarterback play is nothing special. And I think that Tate Rodemaker would have been fine and he would have been competitive in the playoff. And I like to add this layer in there. I think that if they didn't have to go with Brock Glenn and they ended up going with Tate Rodemaker in this game and say he wasn't unavailable because of the concussion protocol issue and they won by 20 plus points, I think that they would have gotten in because it would have at least proved that with the backup, they could still produce good offensive numbers against a strong defense. But, they got the short end of the stick because of the timing of all this.
I agree with everything you just said. My issue with them saying that, A, they're trying to predict the future, and that's not what they're supposed to be doing. They're not supposed to try to predict who would win between these teams and then pick accordingly, because that's just kind of subjective to me. Like, you're just kind of picking, it's like a beauty pageant at that point. And then for me, the thing that's starting to stick out to me more is the fact that, okay, if Jordan Travis's injury is the reason why Florida State's not going to be in the Final Four, why didn't you drop them after the injury? Like, why did you keep them at four for the next 2 weeks?
They got moved up, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, so it's like, why would you leave them in the four if in the back of your head you're already thinking? Because if you had that conclusion on Sunday morning when you woke up that Florida State wasn't as good as the other three or four you were looking at, then you had to have that conclusion when after he got hurt, because it's the same thing, but you left them in there. And that's my thing, is that you gave them false hope. Like, you were never going to put Florida State in this top four unless, like you said, unless they blew out Louisville. And even then, you would have been leaving out the SEC entirely pretty much at that point if you did, which I never figured would happen. Like, they were never going to leave the SEC completely out of this. So to me, it's almost like they kind of set it up a couple weeks back by leaving Florida State in the top four to kind of give them a fail-safe. And if a certain scenario happened where Alabama beats Georgia, Texas wins, and Florida State just kind of squeaks by, now you can justify dropping them down one spot and bringing up the other two. Plus, you moved Texas up four spots. You moved Alabama up four spots. Like, to me, if you look at the overall wholeness of everything they did, they manipulated the board like a week or two before and then just waited for the scenarios to happen. And then when it happened, It's easier to push away angry Florida State fans than it is to push away SEC conference fans that would have been coming to the committee. So lesser of two evils.
Yeah, and that goes in line with everything that I've been saying this whole week, that anyone who feels Florida State is unjustified in being upset with the outcome here, again, we need to remember and expect that the reaction from Texas, and that was what a lot of people were even saying coming into the week, that if Texas say if Georgia did lose, which did end up happening, if Texas got left out, there would be an uprising is what a lot of people were saying. And I think that there's so much truth for that. And you bring up a good point. I think that the Florida State fans are certainly vocal, but we know how vocal SEC fans are, and we know how vocal Texas fans are. Even if they didn't have a chance of getting in, they still would have felt disenfranchised, and they still would have been very upset. So you bring up a really good point there.
Joe DeLeon with me here on the franchise players. You can catch this episode on WTOB 980 AM, 6 o'clock Friday afternoons. And you can catch it in Greensboro on WWBG 1470 AM at 5 PM. The entire podcast is available where all major podcast platforms are available. I want to do this with the four that are actually in, because at this point, there's nothing that can be done. These are the four. This is what we're going to get. So banking on your expertise of these teams and the personnel, the coaching staffs and everything else, I want to go through them and have you explain why they're going to win the national championship. And before you do your explanation, before each one, we're going to get a little Dion.
Do you believe?
In honor of us having two Believe guys here on the same platform. So each time we're going to go through, I want you to explain to the audience why they should believe that whatever team I bring out is going to win the national championship. So let's just start off with Jim Harbaugh and these Wolverines. The Michigan Wolverines pretty much been top two, top three all year, undefeated, Big Ten champion. Survived two coaching suspensions this year from Jim Harbaugh. One, the very beginning of the year, the first three games. Cheeseburgers, kids, something, didn't report it, yada, yada, yada. And then the whole sign-stealing thing at the end of the year, which, according to pretty much every former athlete I've ever spoken to, isn't even that big of a deal, like, to them. So a lot of stuff that's been going on around the Wolverines, but they keep winning. They keep winning Harbaugh style on the ground, pound, play defense, don't turn it over. Why should we believe that the Michigan Wolverines will win the national championship?
Do you believe?
So everything you just talked about there, the adversity that they've been through this season, and I know some people might scoff at the description of calling it adversity because of the suspensions and whatnot for cheating, and they still were without their coach and they still found ways to win. I think the reason why you could believe in Michigan is that, one, they match up better with Alabama than I think some people anticipate, that their defensive line, their edge defenders, and their linebackers are fast enough and strong enough and proficient enough to keep up with and spy Jalen Milroe, keep him in the pocket. They could be the reason why they win this game against Alabama. And then if they beat Alabama, they're physical enough, they run the ball well enough with Donovan Edwards and Blake Corum to produce the results to beat out Washington and Texas and to be a more physical, grind-you-out type of a team. So Michigan's success is going to be because of the physicality that they play with and their defense.
All right. And I'm kind of leaning towards the Wolverines. They've been kind of the ones that, you know, they got here last year, fell short. They're kind of on a mission to kind of complete this. And I wouldn't be surprised if this is Harbaugh's last year in Michigan and he goes back to the NFL. It kind of feels like it's setting up that way for him to fairy tale, win the national championship, be a hero in Ann Arbor and go off to Chicago or my Carolina Panthers. This is where I actually want him to be, but I don't know if they're going to be able to pull that off. Let's go to the number two ranked team, the Washington Huskies, Pac-12 champion. Pac-12 probably had their best season in, I don't know, like 20 years or whatever, in the last season of their existence, Washington representing them, defeated Oregon twice, defeated a lot of ranked teams coming out of the Pac-12, and they've got potential Heisman candidate at quarterback. Do you believe the Washington Huskies can win the national championship, and why?
Do you believe?
I think what sets up Washington so well is that they have such a unique play style, especially compared to the teams that they're going to be facing off with, especially the team that they're facing off with first, Texas. Texas is comparable to what they just saw with Oregon. Strong up front, good quarterback play, good running backs, really good defensive line, but they've got weaknesses in the secondary. And what makes Washington unique in this circumstance is that they've got this fast break style offense where they're able to spread you out. They're able to attack you deep downfield because they have a quarterback with the arm talent to extend the pocket and to make these deep throws. And they've got the receivers that are going to consistently make those plays. There's a reason why it feels like every time there's a, you know, a third and long, Rome Odunze suddenly shows up and makes a big catch. And all these other guys, Polk, McMillan, them being back and healthy is going to only boost the performance of this offense. So the way that they play and the way that they force their opponents to alter their game plan and play to their play style has worked well for them for most of this year, and it's helped them beat Oregon twice. And I think that that's proof that all these other teams that don't have the capability to score as quickly as them might be playing catch up against them if they score and start off with a 10 or point so lead.
The number three seed, the Big 12 champion Texas Longhorns, kind of a, well, it is a bounce back season for the Longhorns. They haven't been in the situation in quite some time. Their biggest victory this season, of course, was at Tuscaloosa against Alabama by double digits. That kind of kept them in the conversation for the rest of the season after that, and they brought it home. Give us a reason why the Texas Longhorns, should we believe the Texas Longhorns will be national champions, and why?
Do you believe?
I think that what sets them up so well, similar to kind of what I was talking about with Michigan, when you've got a really strong defensive front, it allows you to step up and stop any team's opposing rushing game. But I feel like that this offense is in a position where they're clicking and they're in their best rhythm. Now, I don't know what the deal is with Xavier Worthy's foot or ankle injury, that there has really not been any information truly put out there regarding it, except for Sarkisian saying he's probably going to be fine for the playoff game. But as we know, probably fine does not mean he's fully healthy and he's going to play a clean football game, because we just watched something similar happen with Georgia. So I think for them, the fact that they're in their full stride mode and that they got all these warm-up opportunities in the final stretch of the season, especially against Oklahoma State in the Big 12 championship game, because they're clicking on all cylinders offensively and defensively, sets them up to beat Washington potentially. And they already have the formula to beat Alabama, and they could probably pull it off again.
And then speaking of the devil, the fourth seed, the Alabama Crimson Tide, they get their way in there. They jump from number eight to number four to fill that final spot. SEC champion defeated Georgia, Georgia's first loss, and I think like their past 30 games or something like that in the SEC championship game. Jalen Milroe's come a long way from week one to now. Do you believe Alabama is here to ruin this party like I do? Because I feel like once they let them in the door, this has become the Alabama Invitational. Can Alabama win the national championship? Do you believe they will, and why?
Do you believe?
I think the deal with Alabama is that this season, it feels like there were so many opportunities for them to fall apart. They started slow against Ole Miss, felt like they were going to lose that game. They exploded in the second half. Same exact thing happened against Tennessee. If it wasn't for poor in-game coaching, maybe they would have lost to Texas A&M. And then if it wasn't for a bad play call decision on that final play against Auburn, they wouldn't even be anywhere near this conversation a couple of weeks ago. Oh, so man. For me, they've got luck on their side. They're one of those teams that you're just like, yeah, they've got all the athletes, but for some reason, everything just keeps going their way, even though they keep making mistakes. And they do have a really young roster, which does provide me a little bit of wariness. But I think that luck and the inability for defenses to figure out how to stop Jalen Milroe, or at least to do it for more than a couple quarters. I think that there's been some teams that have slowed him down at the beginning of the game, and then in the second half, he has exploded for massive, massive games, especially rushing the football. So that inability to slow Jalen Milroe down, the way that their defense is playing, the secondary that they have is good enough to match up with all the receivers that they're going to face from all of these potential opponents throughout this college football playoff stretch. And of course, the final thought here, Nick Saban. Nick Saban's been here a million times. He's going to know how to get ready. He's going to know how to be prepared, and he's going to figure this thing out so Alabama can win another national title.
I mean, you're giving the man a month to kind of plan this out, you know, like right. This never goes the way they want it to go. Yeah. Alabama's going to just come in and do Alabama things. And this is why I didn't want them anywhere near the playoff. I was like, I kind of liked it last year where they weren't here. Yeah. It was nice to not have them here, but once they got them in there, it was just like, okay. Right. So bonus question before I get you out of here, Joe, the Orange Bowl, Florida State and Georgia are going to be fighting the 5 and 6, ranked teams here in this poll. Do you believe if Florida State finds a way to beat Georgia that Florida State can stake a claim as a co-national champion this year?
Do you believe?
Now, if we had no opt-outs on Florida State's end, it feels like lot of guys on Georgia are going to be unavailable. I don't think we've got true opt-outs yet, but I just pure speculation, I would expect Brock Bowers probably doesn't play. Lam McConkey probably won't end up playing. Maybe Amarius Mims doesn't play. Assuming all these guys make that jump to the NFL and start preparing for the NFL draft, there's some weaknesses here. And I think that defense, the way that they played Florida State, is good enough to maybe put up a little bit of a scare to this banged up Georgia team. But if we're being realistic, Tate Rodemaker, he's still very unproven. Not having Keon Coleman and Johnny Wilson, and there's still a possibility that Jared Verse and Trey Benson are unavailable. All of their best players that helped get them this far seem frustrated and that they're just ready to move on. So if that happens, I'm sorry, Florida State fans, it's not going to be a very fun or exciting game to watch, because, you know, Georgia's equally as pissed and their roster's a lot deeper.
I tried, Florida State fans. Like, I'm trying to figure out a way for you to get there, and I don't think there's a way.
Yeah,
especially sadly like this. Isn't. Yeah. So follow Joe on Twitter at Joe DeLeon. Go and listen to the Ruffino and Joe show, correct?
Yes.
Excellent stuff over at Believe Podcast Networks. Believe has grown so much. I might have been one of the first hosts they hired. I've been with them for 4 years, and
yeah, I think we both were around the same time when we started just hosting. Yeah, no, it's crazy to see how far Believe's come. And you know, there's still more in the future. Hopefully we continue to expand and bring on more amazing content.
Yeah. I mean, you can find stuff in airports now. It's on over the top television stuff, apps, and all kinds of things. So definitely Believe doing their thing. I'm happy to be a part of the Believe family. Catch Joe on Twitter. Catch him each week on his a bunch of different things on Believe, actually, besides his own show. Appreciate you, Joe.
Of course. Thanks, Desmond.
Coming up, Tap Outs and Touchdowns. Ryan Frick will join us here. We'll talk a little WWE before we get out of here. It's Franchise Players on TobaccoRoadSportsRadio.com.
In professional sports, a franchise player is an athlete who is not simply the best player on their team, but one that the team can build their franchise around for the foreseeable future.
Welcome back into Franchise Players here on WWBG 1470 AM and WTOB 980 AM 96.7 FM across the Triad every Friday afternoon. I'm your host, Desmond Johnson. If you're hearing that music, you probably haven't heard it in a while on Franchise Players, but if you're hearing that music, it means it's time to talk some WWE. I'm not talking about the Panthers anymore today. I'm done. I'm through with it. They have completely just ruined my week in terms of having to discuss what they're doing or not doing over the course of this week. And one of the shows I was on, go check it out from Wednesday's episode, Tap Outs and Touchdowns. Follow them on Twitter at Tap Outs and TDs, the host of that, and the Cat Cave on the Keep Pounding Podcast Network. Ryan Frick joining me. What's going on, brother?
Hey, man. Glad to be here. Glad to talk some pro wrestling as the Carolina Panthers news has been just more depressing and more depressing as every day goes on.
Yeah, so I don't know what else to say.
I mean, I don't think there is anything much left to say.
Let's roll the ball out. Let's see what happens on Sunday. Some interesting stuff since me, you, and Mike Davis would get together and talk wrestling about once a month or so on Franchise Players. And Mike is working his way back to getting back in the groove of things. And he appreciates all the love and people checking in on him and everything else out there. So definitely shout out to Mike. Since previously on Franchise Players, last time we talked wrestling and WWE, there were rumors of CM Punk returning to WWE. I don't think any of us really believed it was going to happen. Hell froze over, and CM Punk showed up on Raw a couple weeks ago. Or not Raw, but Survivor Series a couple weeks ago, and then showed up on Raw. Randy Orton shows up. And I do like the way they did it at Survivor Series, where the Raw prior, they pretty much announced Randy Orton's going to be there. So it's not really stealing from Randy when he finally makes his appearance and comes out and gets his pop. He didn't come out with the rest of them, which I think was by design. And then I love the fact that it felt like even the announcers didn't know that CM Punk was back there, and that because they were rolling the credits, like literally, like they did old school, like WCW style, like the way their pay-per-views would end sometime, like back in the 90s.
That's when they brought Roddy Piper back on Halloween Havoc.
Yeah, you think everything's over and it's running the credits, and all of a sudden, like some music drops, and you're like, who is that? And it's like somebody that just defected from like Rick Rude or somebody like walks in. You're like, what is going on? Like it was something like that. And I don't like CM Punk. I've never hit it. I've never cared for him. I hated the whole era when he was champ for like 2 years or whatever. I thought it was boring. But I got to admit, this opens up some possibilities on both sides, Raw and SmackDown, with him being there. Let's start off with CM Punk. Your thoughts on this, because I've watched you on Facebook and Twitter, and I know you were not a CM Punk fan whatsoever. So what were your thoughts when you heard the static and he walked out?
What's funny is that I've talked to my co-host for the wrestling shows on Tap Outs and Touchdowns, PJ Steven, and we've basically agreed to like act like it hasn't happened. So when we go to talk about Survivor Series, we're gonna stop talking about Survivor Series after the main event, and we're gonna act like the credits rolled and nothing else happened. We're gonna act like, yeah, Monday Night Raw came and we got to see Randy Orton interact with people. Yeah. That was cool. And then the show ended at 10:45. We're acting like he's still not there, because it's – listen, I've been very vocal and adamant about my disdain for CM Punk. I won't call it hatred, because hatred is too strong for someone that I kind of feel nothing about.
Yeah.
Listen, he has his reputation precedes himself. There's a reason why there were plenty of wrestlers in the WWE locker room, one being Seth Rollins, that went on record to say that we don't want him here. And if you look at AEW, the way that he left, all you had to do was get along with the people you work with, and he couldn't do it. You know, yep. when he showed up to Monday Night Raw, the news was backstage that he was out there socializing with everyone else and not being the old jaded CM Punk that was angry about everything. But at the end of his promo, when he got off mic, you can hear him clear as day say to the camera, I'm here to make friends. I'm not here to, or I'm here to make money. I'm not here to make friends.
Yeah. That old Scott Hall vibe. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Like, what do you mean? You're not like his promo just talked about the fact that he's changed, that he's home, that he's happy and this, that, and the other. And then he takes a direct shot at anybody in WWE or AEW that is unhappy to see him back. Like at one time rooted for CM Punk. His obvious infamous pipe bomb is one of the best promos of this century. But seeing what he's done and seeing how he's treated people, both when he was on TV as a babyface and a heel, there's a reason why Punk is in his name, because that's what he is.
Yeah, for real.
And so I it's one of those things that if he's on my TV, I'll turn the channel for the segment. If he's on a pay-per-view, I call it my PBO. It's the time that I get up off the couch and I find something to do for the next 5 to 10 minutes. I think the only interest I would have in him would be if they were to bring Stone Cold Steve Austin out of retirement, because it's obviously, you know, it's been one of those talks that they had years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I only care about that because I grew up a Stone Cold Steve Austin fan.
And look, Austin looked good 2 WrestleManias ago against Kevin Owens. Now, they basically made it a brawl, which, you know, made it work for Austin. Like, it's not like he was out there doing pile drivers and stuff. They basically just brawled all across the arena, which is kind of Stone Cold stick anyway. So I could kind of see that with Punk. I feel like they could go a couple ways here. There's a couple ways they could go here. And I think Paul Heyman's the key to all this, because Heyman has a relationship with CM Punk. Yeah, of course he has a relationship with Roman Reigns. Now it feels like, okay, first things first, Randy Orton's on SmackDown. So it's probably gonna be Randy Orton and Roman Reigns. It's gonna probably be Reigns' opponent, Roman Rumble, I'd imagine. So I don't think they'll put Orton in the Rumble. He's won it 3 times. I don't know. Maybe they will. But I would imagine Orton and Reigns are going to be the bout there. And there you might see, I don't know, something, interference, something, whatever, to allow Roman to keep the belt. This idea popped up in my head. What if they redo for WrestleMania season the 2-man power trip?
CM Punk away from Roman, you're going to have Solo do it. Like, that's how you're going to elevate Solo.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to, you can even have Jimmy throw in there. But I mean, nobody's talking about the fact there's other members of the Bloodline that are floating around here that are not in WWE.
Yep.
That are being rumored to be in talks with WWE to come in. So we may have like an NWO black and white situation where all of a sudden, like, it's not just Jimmy and Solo anymore. Now we get other members of the Anoa'i family that join this. So as far as Brock Lesnar and Roman, I don't think it happens. I do want to mention that you mentioned it's going to be Orton and Reigns at Rumble. Absolutely. I don't see there being another option. I hope they don't let Randy be the one to take it off of him. I'm still holding out hope that it's Cody that takes it from him, because I still think ultimately Orton's on SmackDown. I know we haven't seen CM Punk since the Monday after Survivor Series, but I think right now, Paul Levesque, Triple H, is doing everything he can to convince Seth Rollins to do a program with CM Punk.
Mm-hmm.
Because after, whether it was a work or a shoot, whatever it was, after Survivor Series went off the air, Michael Cole and Corey Graves had to hold Seth Rollins back as he was shouting expletives and giving the double birds at CM Punk. And you could hear him say, he better not be back there when I get back, because I'll punch him right in his face.
Yeah, so there was only a couple of people that even knew CM Punk was there. I think they told a couple of wrestlers, and that was it. So I'm curious if Seth was even one of them. He might have even known.
My understanding was that the news was that nobody except for Triple H and I think commentary was alerted late.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think any of the wrestlers knew, because you even saw another video where Rhea Ripley, and Dominic Mysterio were both kind of giving it like the shoulder shrug, like, who is this guy? Like, you know, big deal. But yeah, I mean, listen, there's a lot of things that you can do with CM Punk. He's not getting brought back so that he can be fourth on the card at WrestleMania. There's a 2-day WrestleMania now.
Yep.
He will be main eventing one of those days. And my honest opinion is that he main events it with Seth Rollins. And more than likely, he's the one to dethrone Seth Rollins, because Seth Rollins is on his own run. He's won the title and he hasn't lost it since. And they've been teasing this whole back injury for month after month. Eventually it's going to come to an end and they're going to have to give Seth some time off. And I feel like that's what they're going to do. They're going to let, I think CM Punk wins the Royal Rumble now, or that, or he goes into Elimination Chamber down in Australia and wins Elimination Chamber. And that's how he gets his title shot. Either he or Cody Rhodes will win the Royal Rumble. Now, you mentioned Brock Lesnar and Gunther for a second. I do want to touch that before I forget about it.
Okay.
Gunther was on a radio station, a radio program here in Greenville, South Carolina, with Rob Brown on the Rob Brown Show. And he's the one that made the comment about how he felt that Brock Lesnar was his final boss. And so the stuff that's getting thrown out about there actually originated here, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why there are so many people that are talking about Gunther versus Brock Lesnar, because that's who Gunther wants. Eventually, we're eventually going to get to a time where Gunther is going to lose his Intercontinental Championship and he will be thrust into the world title picture, be it with Cody Rhodes or with CM Punk, because I think WrestleMania, both titles change hands, when all is said and done.
I don't think Roman's losing that belt at WrestleMania, and I've said it for the past 2 years. I don't know if it's gonna be Cody. I don't know if it's gonna be The Rock in like a non-title match or whatever it might end up being. Maybe it's a head of the table match or whatever. I'm holding out for Rock versus Reigns, because that seems to be the one that everybody wants. But there's also a segment, yourself included, that wants that rematch Cody and Roman. As it comes to Gunther, what you just said, it reminds me of this point last year when Bobby Lashley was on radio a lot talking about how he wanted Brock Lesnar, and that was the one thing he never really got a chance to do. And then lo and behold, about 2 months after that interview was out, they start a program together. Give me, I think you already said it, but give me your two main events for WrestleMania as we stand right now.
Yeah, I think we're going to get CM Punk versus Seth Rollins on night one, and we're going to get Cody Rhodes versus Roman on night two, and both challengers win the titles.
Wow. I mean, you can,
There's an option where you can throw in, I think Jimmy Jay is going to start night one. The main event, like, there's always like a main event match that starts the night of the pay-per-view. So
A lot of times seems like Seth is in that opening match too. It feels like the opening match and the main event are the two biggest matches on the card more often than not nowadays. Yeah. Which is the way it should be.
On the last WrestleMania, every match was a banger. They were all good.
Yeah, yeah, it really was, actually. I was
probably one of the best manias in history, if we look back at it.
Yeah. I was thinking about rewatching it the other day. I was like, that was a really good WrestleMania weekend. And then I think after you do Jimmy versus Jay, Solo, maybe Solo versus Gunther, I don't know, because they're on SmackDown together, but they've been kind of keeping Gunther, or no, Gunther's on Raw. The U.S. title's on SmackDown. They've kind of squashed LA Knight, it feels like, a little bit too. Like, he doesn't feel like he has the same build as he had like a month or two ago. Like, if they really wrote it when it was really hot, they're kind of doing the same thing they used to do to Rock and Triple H and Stone Cold back in the day when they were keeping them away from belts. They would just have them kind of doing these weird angles that had, they're just kind of spinning their wheels until they got to WrestleMania season. That's what it feels like they're doing with him. So I'm not sure what they do, but they had plans for him. This seems like they're pushing him in a different direction. So
maybe they trade him to Raw and he wins the Intercontinental title.
That could, there you go. Cause Gunther's running out of meat. Yeah. You don't have a whole lot to really go after. We're up against it, but we got to get out of here. Go follow Ryan on Twitter at Tapouts and TDs, spelled out Tapouts and TDs, to get the latest from Tapouts and Touchdowns, as well as the Cat Cave, and follow us on the KP Pounding _ FFSN, for the Keep Pounding Podcast Network. We're done for the week. You can catch this on all major podcast platforms. We'll be back next Friday with a brand new episode. You've been locked and loaded into Franchise Players here on SebaccoRoadSportsRadio.com.